I truly believe that you cannot learn this watching a video. You just can't. I'm going to be honest, Scott.
Yeah.
You can watch Ronnie Coleman 1,000 times, and I did that. I did watch Ronnie Coleman. I did watch Branch Warren. I watched pretty much every single MOC video that you can imagine. I've watched them all twice over from a very, very young age. And let me tell you, just watching someone train versus being in the gym, smelling the atmosphere and feeling the energy,
yeah,
is a completely different ballgame.
What's going on, guys? Welcome back to Think Big Bodybuilding Media. I'm Scott McNally. Back again, I am joined by IFBB Pro, Kuba Challen. Guys, all of our programming is brought to you by TrueNutrition.com. Use our code THINK for additional savings on high-quality, third-party tested supplements from a company that you can trust. If you're out in the UK, you got to go to Ultraflex. Which Ultraflex do you have again? Where are you at?
Ultraflex Rotherham.
Rotherham. That's, I can't say that word very well. It's a very British name. Anyway... we're going to have a lot of fun today, guys. We're talking about basically harnessing intensity. And Kuba, this was my request, really. And here's the thing that I see. I see a lot of guys out there, younger guys, that are really trying to do the ultimate best they can. They aren't training in Ultraflex with you. They don't see what your intensity looks like. But they are giving their best. And sometimes I see their top set, back off set, you know, push pull legs, and they're just not going hard enough. And I understand that intensity is something that we build over time. But how can we help people today to build their intensity?
There's quite a few things that I want to unpack here, because it's not just clear black and white, because there will be actually a lot that goes into it, especially when it comes to someone's psychology to actually build up the intensity. Because realistically, Scott, everyone has a very different pain threshold. And I think ultimately, having the ability to train with all out intensity and train to failure will have to come with high pain threshold as well.
Yeah.
Now, unfortunately, that is not for everyone, right? And we have to accept that. And I think as much as some people want to be able to train extremely hard, I just don't think some people naturally have it in them. Now, that does not mean that they can just accept mediocrity. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying here is it will take time for someone to develop resilience and build up to be able to actually train with such high effort. Now, let me unpack things for you a little bit and give you a little bit of my background and my story on how I actually learned how to truly train hard and go with all out intensity, right?
That'd
now,
be great.
I want you to pull some Ian Harrison. So type in Ian Harrison bodybuilder and pull him up, please, if you can.
All right.
Just whilst I'm talking. Now, some of you that don't know, I actually boxed before training, before bodybuilding. I was an amateur boxer and I did actually compete. I did have 8 fights in amateurs and I did pretty damn well. Now, for me, the hard training was ingrained in me from the coaches that I had from a very, very early age. Because back in those days, especially, I can actually say that back in those days, I am 29 now, so I can say that back in those days. When I was 11, going into that gym, especially my first boxing gym, the coach and his brothers were actually a very well-known family in Rotherham. They're just hard people, right? And you go into that gym, you knew you would get pushed extremely hard. So that was somewhat my first exposure to knowing what true effort means. And it was simply training. And again, I will elaborate on that a little bit more. But from a very young age, I always trained with more developed and older individuals. And that was from the start, even when I was boxing.
Yeah.
Now, let's get on to bodybuilding and move on to my first point. My first real training partner, get picture of Ian Harrison up, please, because my first real training partner was called Tony Megson. He was a competitive bodybuilder as well, and he was the training partner of Ian Harrison, who is a British bodybuilding legend. Anybody that knows British bodybuilding, especially from the older days, will know who Ian Harrison is. Tremendous quad development. He actually tore both of his knees and he still managed to rebuild his quads to an enormous size. His legs were huge. And that was, I truly believe, done through the training intensity that he had. He was one of the best juniors to come out of UK. He was actually pretty young there probably as well. No, but as you can see, extremely well developed, and you look at their physique and you can see that this geezer trains super hard. So I can imagine his training partner, Tony Megson, he was an absolute savage, a pretty much a psycho back in those days when it came to training. So for me, my first exposure at 15, 16 years old was training with Tony. And I kid you not, Scott, we would train legs Sunday morning, every single morning.
Yeah.
Every single week, week by week. My legs would be so sore, it would hurt to sit down on the toilet up until Friday.
Yeah, some people might say, no, Kuba, well, that's too much. We don't need to do that much to grow muscle.
I could not care less. If I could go back in time, I would absolutely just not change a single thing, because the lessons that I had learned with Tony of pushing myself above and beyond my limits, I will carry them for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
I kid you not, Scott. We would train legs on Sunday. Monday, it was just a disaster. I couldn't hardly walk. The only day out of the week for a year straight where I could actually have pretty much normal function of my legs was Saturday. And every single session, and that is no exaggeration, every single session would be the same. We would follow the old traditional Dorian split, training four times per week. And I kid you not, even at that young age, I needed all the recoverability that I could get, because every single session, it was done complete failure, forced reps, rest pause sets, drop sets, every single set, every single rep. And there was no surrender. And I remember back in those days, for the first 6 months straight, I would get nervous starting from Saturday, knowing what's going to happen on Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
And because I had such high regard and such high respect, and I still do, for Tony and the people that was at that gym at that time, it was Bruno's back in the day, and I had such immense respect for those people, and that they was willing to give me the time of the day, I almost felt like I needed to push myself even harder, not only to impress them, but not to let them down.
Yeah. Yeah, that is huge, man. That and I have similar stories of learning intensity from other people, people that I looked up to, people that I wanted to basically, you know, I wanted them to know, like, hey, you're not wasting your time training with me. I might not necessarily be as strong as this guy, but I sure can show the same level of guts. And it, you know, talking about this topic of intensity, it's something that is very difficult to explain on a podcast comparatively to actually being in the gym with someone. I just want to say right now, I think that this point that you're making, like learning it from someone else, that if you want this bad enough and that you want to figure out how to train hard, that you'll seek it out. You know, you sought it out. Like that wasn't something that somebody came knocked on your door. It was like, hey, I want you to come train with me. You sought that out. Just like I sought it out, I'd be willing to drive hours, you know, to get that workout in. I'm not going to be able to do that, you know, every day, but my day off. Yeah. Heck yeah. I will make half the day about driving out to train with somebody who's going to help me up my game. Because just like you said, that's lessons that I'm going to take with me for the rest of my life. It's not even about that workout. It's about the lessons you take with you moving on from there.
Yeah, absolutely. And let me tell you, Scott, whether the training was productive or not, I could not care less.
Yeah.
Yes. It probably could have been better, but it does not matter, because they have taught me the level of intensity that is required to operate across anything that I do for the future. So my training and the intensity that they applied to the training was the same for life as well. So The lessons was huge. And obviously not everybody is going to be privileged to have the same experience as I will with having such a great training partner. And if you're watching this right now, and you know that you don't have that option of having a great training partner, this is where I would seek out actively and look for coaches and actually get some in-person training and pay someone to take you for a session. I am pretty sure that there will be a bodybuilder in your area that will be happy for you to go and get put through the session with them if you pay them, unfortunately. In this day and age, yeah, I very much doubt someone is going to you their time for free, unfortunately. Unless you are willing to be someone's training partner, then that's a different story. But I truly believe that I would not have been able to reach such level of intensity training by myself, because nobody has even ever showed me something like this in person, or I never actually understood and never realized that I was capable of doing the work until I actually did
Somebody
it.
else told you. Somebody told you. You know what I mean? You thought you were done, and somebody told you, Kuba, you have more in you, and you blindly listened because you trusted that person, and then you found out you actually did have more.
Yeah, 100%. It's not just about the trust, but you know, you don't want to let that person down. You've got a lot of respect for them. They're putting time and effort into you. You want to give your best. And because I was so passionate about training from that age, they saw that and they was willing to invest into me and give their time to me, which again, I will be incredibly grateful for the rest of my life. But I truly believe that you cannot learn this watching a video. You just can't. I'm going to be honest, Scott.
Yeah.
You can watch Ronnie Coleman 1,000 times, and I did that. I did watch Ronnie Coleman. I did watch Branch Warren. I watched pretty much every single MOC video that you can imagine. I've watched them all twice over from a very, very young age. And let me tell you, just watching someone train versus being in the gym, smelling the atmosphere and feeling the energy is a completely different ballgame. Like, when you have someone standing over you, and in my case, it was a group that was training like a 3 or 4. And when you have two guys standing over you, telling you to keep going, they're lifting the weight up, they're making you do 4 reps, they're making you do the drop sets, they're not letting you get off the machine until you get more reps.
Yeah.
They're pulling the weight up for you, they're making you hold the eccentric and then squeeze it down, especially leg extensions. I can remember this like it was yesterday. It was hell. But it was just such a great experience, because once you learn how to take things up to that level, and once you learn how to unlock that gear, it's like riding a bike. You will always know how to tap into that dog inside you. If you can find that dog inside you, it will always be there, and it will always be there ready to get let loose whenever you need it to.
Yeah.
So if you don't have the opportunity to train with someone like I did, hire someone. I urge you to do that, at least for one session. And some people might think, you're not going to learn anything in one session. Well, no, not when it comes to training and execution and everything else. But if you don't need that, hire someone just to put you through a horrible, intense workout and see if they can truly test you without hurting you. Let me just put that into brackets first, because I know that there will be some people out there that will just want to hurt someone, and that's just not what we want here. Everything that I did, Scott, was still incredibly safe. Absolutely. They made me do the extra reps, or it wasn't done with any risk of me hurting myself. And I touch wood, I never actually did hurt myself back in those days either. And it was hell. So another option that I'm going to throw out there, and that's something I heard Matt Jensen actually speak about probably about 10 years ago on a podcast, is I want people to actually get on a spin bike. Put the spin bike onto the hardest setting, so it's very, very hard to move. And then this is going to require someone's honesty to really be there, because if you're not honest with yourself, you're not going to know if you're truly giving everything, right?
Yeah.
So what I want you to do, get on the spin bike, turn the spin bike onto the hardest setting, and then I want you to strap into the pedals. Pedal as hard as you physically can until you cannot turn the pedal any further. And I mean, until you literally cannot move your foot any further, no matter what you do.
And there's a difference between the burn in the pain and the actual muscle failure. Because I think that we can mistake that feeling, that burn that starts happening. We're like, oh, there was like a lactic acid burn, and this is the end because it hurts so bad. You could still move the pedal through that pain, and you're not going to hurt yourself. You're not going to tear a quad on an exercise bike, you know?
When the pain starts, that is when the set starts, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because in my opinion, when you start to experience that burn and pain, that is when you start to reach or come close to the effective reps that you need. Now, the set is only just begun, in my opinion. So you need to lean into that pain. And I've definitely seen that so many times, is people start to experience that pain and they stop. And I think leaning into that pain and learning how to stay locked into that set is going to be super, super beneficial. Now, Scott, can you access Instagram on there?
Absolutely, yeah.
Can you go on my page and go on latest, please?
Yeah. Give me just a second here. Hey, I want to mention too, careful with pounding the the desk. It's echoing into the microphone. I know you're passionate.
Oh, sorry.
Give me just a second here. I'm pulling this up. All right. Let's find Cuba. Let's see. First of all, I'm seeing Sasan here. Sasan's looking pretty awesome. There we go. Give me just a second here. It's not going to be like full screen, but we'll do something like this. There we go. Yeah.
The leg extensions.
This one right here?
Yep.
Closer to failure point, you're going to want to do everything in your power to change your execution.
Yeah.
Right? This is where most people have got a misunderstanding with training and what training hard is or what isn't, right? We don't allow our execution to change to complete more reps. That's a lot harder than just spazzing out on a machine and just doing whatever just to get more reps. So now, the pain you probably had in your quads versus the pain you had in your knees.
Totally different,
exactly, that's the whole point.
So with that said just now, the
last rep didn't count.
Just the last one, just not the second last one.
Yeah. And now, with a set like this, as we get deeper into a contest prep, you remove those fucking reps past failure, because they're reps past failure, they're not worth the trade-off. Right now in Fu Thai, completely fine.
Yeah.
Same with force reps, same with set extensions.
Yeah.
The second you don't have the food intake to support that kind of work, gets pulled out.
Also, it's unproductive.
It's only productive when food's high.
Okay. Yeah. Cool.
That's great.
So my whole point, getting back on topic here, is there's definitely a bit of a skill to training to true failure as well. Because one thing you'll notice as well, Scott, is when people learn to train hard, they experience the pain that you've mentioned. The second they experience that pain on any given exercise that they are doing, is what happens then is they start to change their execution to make the movement easier and basically start using all other muscles to continue getting more reps.
Yes.
And that is something you have to resist. And that's the urge you have to fight more to not do, because ultimately, let's say you're doing a set of bicep curls, right? You want to take your bicep to complete failure. You don't want to all of a sudden start throwing your body into it, more body English, and using momentum, or even your front delt, to start to complete more reps, because that kind of defeats the object. So I do think there's a lot to unpack when it comes to learning how to truly train with all that intensity. But for beginners, for people that just need to learn how to train hard, it's not something I even want them to concern themselves about. I literally want them to just go as hard as they physically can and stay reasonably safe in doing so. Because another conversation that we need to have is this, is we don't want someone to go into the gym when they're not experienced and start lifting with crazy intensity and then potentially hurt themselves, because that's just not going to be productive in any way, shape or form.
Let me jump in and ask something. What qualifies somebody as experienced then? When do you reach the point where you can say, okay, now I'm going to try to really push this intensity like Coop is talking about?
Oh, that's a great question, Scott. That's a great question, to be honest. What qualifies someone as experienced? I think someone that's learned the basic principles of training. So someone that's actually learned how to execute movements well with full range of motion, with good quality, and they actually know what tempo is. So someone that's got a basic understanding of training and basic understanding of what's happening to their body. Because one thing you'll notice is anyone that first starts training and they're going to the gym, they don't really have any awareness of what's going on, especially if they have no previous athletic experience. They don't really have any awareness of the limbs or even the movement. Like, you see someone doing a squat when they've never done a squat before in their life, and it's like watching a giraffe try and fall in half, right?
Yeah.
So I think what qualifies someone is learning these movement patterns well and having a basic understanding of training and understanding what tempo is, what range of motion is, and what can potentially hurt them and what cannot. Because if you just tell someone to train as hard as possible and they don't have that awareness, it's so easy, I think, for someone to really hurt themselves. Even when they're still starting off and they're not really that strong, they can still hurt themselves if they do something stupid enough and if they do it hard enough.
Yeah. Early on, I hurt myself a lot in that fashion. You know, I'm bench pressing in my basement. on my old weight set that my parents had. And the next day, oh, my neck is feeling tight. I pinched something in my trap. I'm not training traps. I'm training chest. But I didn't understand how to focus on that target muscle. After you do get to that point where you can push the intensity, I've heard something I really liked from John Meadows. He said that he would let it slide by about 10%. Meaning he's going to focus on that pec through the press movement. And of course, you know, you're not going to just stop once that's complete. Like you can take it a little further. You can almost cheat it a little bit. You know what I mean? And that's kind of what part of that intensity is. But once he gets to that point where he feels like we're getting past that 10% of other body parts starting to work in, that's where he would call it quits. I liked that a lot.
I do like that a lot as well. But there's also risk versus reward ratio that comes alongside of that as well. And it depends how much volume you are actually using, because what you'll find is for a lot of people like myself, having that extra 10% leads me to actually getting pretty smashed pretty quick. Because if I do every single set and I do give myself leeway for that extra 10%, it's just way too much to be able to recover from. So it all depends. I think for majority of people that works, but then once you start to see what the progress looks like and how you actually feel off the back of that, then you have to see if the trade-off is worth it or not. For some people, I think the trade-off is absolutely worth it, taking that extra 10%. But then for other people, I don't think it is. Like, for example, Nick Walker. I don't think that extra 10% would be a worthy trade-off for Nick. And it would be both in terms of his recovery and in terms of injury risk as well.
Okay. Yeah, I still think 10% is minimal on, say, something that's going to be, and I wouldn't do that every set, but when we're talking about like, hey, we're going to failure. Let's say John did, you know, two warm-ups, eight reps with a couple reps in reserve, and then one big set. That's where I think he was talking about it would be in that one big set. I think for me personally, I might disagree then, because I feel like 10% isn't that much. If you're at that level in Nick Walker, you're still keeping the majority of it in there. It might be that last rep or two. So we may differ a little bit there, but I see exactly where you're coming from. You're digging yourself further into that hole by being flexible. I guess my thought might be that a lot of the audience that are learning to build this intensity and learning to take it further, I see them cutting it short just because they reach mechanical failure almost. And at that point they're like, okay, I'm done, you know, and they just rack it versus trying to give just a little bit more.
Yeah, I agree. But there's also another way that you need to look at it is this. I am a fan of the 10%, but it has to be case specific.
Okay.
I wouldn't allow my 10% to be to flip in on a squat pattern or a heavy leg press. The 10% I would only allow for isolation movements or movements that are much safer and externally braced. So basically any machines, any mostly isolation exercises where you know the risk of injury is extremely small. This is where I would even argue forced reps can be utilized pretty, pretty well. I mean, the recovery demand that you are going to get out of a force rep on a tricep extension or a bicep curl is very, very slim. So you have to also look at which movements you want to truly take it there. And another movement that is...
I'd agree with that, by the way.
It's horrible when it comes to pain is a leg extension. I mean, taking force reps, and I mean true force reps on a leg extension, is potentially some of the best quality stimulus that you'll get. But this is where I don't think the 10% trade-off is worth it on a movement like an RDL, because if your form breaks down even 5% on an RDL, this is where you are risking either a hamstring tear or a lower back injury, because it is a big complex movement. And another movement where I don't think it would be worth the trade-off is, for example, an incline dumbbell press or even a hack squat. Like, these are movements generally where I would not want to see that much of a breakdown in form for people that are bigger and stronger individuals. For someone that's learning how to train hard, you're probably not going to hurt yourself with a 10% breakdown, but you still have to have self-awareness of what's risky and what isn't, and how your body feels in that movement. Because if you feel something off, you probably are better off dumping that weight rather than trying to take it and then hurting yourself. Does that make sense?
I'll go with that. Yeah, I'll go with that. Let me ask you something. You mentioned, say, the benefit of... What's that?
I said, we'll agree to disagree here.
No, I agree with you. I'm on it. I wouldn't want to break the form down in a squat. I wouldn't want to break the form down in an RDL. So I think that there is some middle ground. I wouldn't say that it's a black and white thing, but I could definitely see looking at where you could utilize it, and not through your entire workout, but through the most important elements. I actually was going to ask you about force reps, so I'm going to hold on to that because I had one other question then. So one of the common questions we get asked by you guys is, what would you do differently with your bodybuilding if you could go back in time? Given all the experience and education I have today, there's a number of things that I would have done differently. One of them is that I would have started using collagen sooner. Collagen is one of the few supplements that will actually rebuild connective tissue. It took me tearing my super spinatus in 2021 to get with the program. I use True Nutrition's hydrolyzed beef collagen. I get the unflavored version. I pay for it myself, just like you guys do. I use 20 grams a day, mix it into my coffee. It's totally unflavored. You don't even taste it. Plus, I use 10 grams of their micronized creatine. Creatine has been shown to improve brain health, especially for the aging brain. I need that. And of course, you know, we've always known about the muscle building effects. So this is my morning routine every day, and I'm encouraging you guys to do the same. Use our code THINK for savings. Plus, it's the only way for them to know that this advertising is being heard. Otherwise, they just think you're some random dude that clicked on an ad.
Ain't nothing to it but to do it.
We're talking about this high intensity where you are taking things as far as you can. Now, how does that apply to a workout? When we're talking about, say, if you're doing, how many sets did you say you do? We talked about this last time on how many chest movements do you, or chest exercises, how many sets do you end up doing in a push workout?
I would probably say 6 direct sets for my chest.
That's what I thought. Now, are all 6 of those actual working sets, are all of those taken to this level of failure that we're talking about here?
Yeah, absolutely. There's not a single set that I'm going to leave in tank.
Okay.
There's going to be sets even recently, if my training partner sees that it's a 50-50 rep, meaning that my execution is still locked in, and let me explain the 50-50 rep here. So, last repetition was a very hard rep. The rep speed moved super slow, but it still looked like I might have a little bit more in me. That's when I'll take another rep. And that's going to be a 50-50 rep because I'm not entirely sure if that rep is in there. Now, if I take that rep, I'm not going to break my form to complete that rep. This is where the training partner steps in, and this is where they will assist me with a forced rep if I need one. But let's say, for example, I'm doing a chest press. I wouldn't fail at the bottom and I wouldn't have someone pulling me out of the hole. It would literally be where I'm 3/4 through the press and then I hit a little bit of a sticky point and then I almost stop. That's when the training partner jumps in and then give me assistance. But it's actually took me about 4 years to train Mark to be able to do that effectively without pissing me off. So you will need someone. You will need someone that will be quite, you know, skillful at doing so to be able to catch that and do that effectively. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It takes time to have a good training partner that actually knows how to spot you. All right. Let me let you take the lead here again. I interrupted us a little bit and I want to hear what else you have to say.
No, that's it. That's it.
Okay.
Regarding the question.
All right. Well, listen then. What about forced reps then? Because you did mention that. I thought it'd be a great way to talk a little bit more about intensity techniques, which we have talked about, you know, in the previous episode, but I don't think we directly talked about forced reps. How does that work?
So I do think forced reps are an excellent tool to actually learn how to take your sets completely there or even past failure, because generally, let's say you're training with someone, you know they've got some reps in the tank and potentially they had more in them. It's not exactly forced reps, but you're probably forcing them to do the reps that they generally wouldn't do. Now, when you have someone that's a little bit more advanced, my preference for forced reps is, again, on movements that are safer. Or if someone simply gets stuck, I will give them a +1. Now, the use of forced reps, if you are training with moderate volume like myself, I think the use of forced reps needs to be somewhat limited. So personally, in an off season for me, I like to take one force rep per session. So let's say if I'm training legs, I would either take a force rep on a leg press if it's safe to do so, or a leg extension. But to be honest, my preference would probably be the leg extension, because that is the movement that I find gives me the most pain out of them all. It really is horrible, especially when you're working like 12 to 15 rep range and then you do force reps on top. It's just another level of hurt. But back on the topic of learning how to train more intensely, I think, especially at the beginning of your journey, I would sway towards people training with less training volume. So less direct sets, but more intensity and more intensifiers. So more force reps or even drop sets to truly lean into the harder training side of things. Because once someone can harness training to failure, training with effective reps, that's when they can actually afford to scale things back and do more sets and keep things a little bit more tame. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, it does. Yeah.
What's your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I agree with that 100%, man. I really don't have anything to add. I'm pretty much on the exact same page with you there. So do you want to move on to our questions?
Yes, sir. We've got quite a few good ones.
All right. Yeah, and there's one that's kind of a reoccurring theme whenever we've talked about in-depth training stuff. There's always going to be the one guy who says something. I don't want to put this question up on the screen because he mentions some specific compounds that the algorithm may not like very much. And we've done a pretty good job. People enjoy the way you've mentioned creatine. You know, like when we're adding creatine back into the plan, people have enjoyed that. They know exactly what you're talking about. Anyway, he says, why does he make it sound so complicated? Why don't we just go to the gym, train hard as we can with good form, eat clean food, and take compounds like everybody did back in the 90s? You know, are we wasting our time here, Kuba, for an hour at a time on these shows when they could be doing that?
Right. So I have absolutely nothing against what you said. You could absolutely be doing that, but fact of the matter is, just that would only take you so far. I mean, unless you are the 1% genetic elite, you are probably not watching Think Big Bodybuilding because you are already getting big. You don't need to think about it. You don't need the knowledge. You are going in the gym, you are lifting weights, you're eating a little bit of food, taking a little bit of creatine on top, and you turn into a monster.
Yeah.
But fact of the matter is, and even working with some of the higher genetic threshold individuals, just doing that would only get them so far. There will come a time where you will have to think about what you do, and you will have to get a little bit more nuance with your training in order to keep getting more out of it. It's just inevitable. Over time, you are going to have to find a way to train harder. You are going to have to find a way to train smarter so you stay injury-free. You are going to have to find a way to break through a plateau. It's just inevitable. So if it was just so easy and as simple as he made out, I mean, we would all look like Jay Cutler.
Yeah.
But fact of the matter is, we don't. There's definitely huge variance on an individual basis as to what kind of response people see from a training stimulus and how much people can actually get away with and what they actually need to do to keep making progress. And that's the biggest fun part of training and fun part of bodybuilding in general, because you can always find a way to improve your process and get something more out of it. And at times that might mean doing less. At times you might need to do more. It just all depends on the individual, right? So, you know, if said person is looking like Jay Cutler, then, you know, I see no problem. Keep doing what you're doing. You probably don't need to overly think about stuff if you are making progress. However, if you come to a point where you've hit bottleneck in your progression, that's when you probably need to start thinking about what you're doing. Again, think big.
Yeah. I think, first of all, we do have good pros that listen, by the way. So there is that. We've got you, number one. there was a time that you, and you've talked about this on the show, that you had to figure things out to bring up your back. I think that is a prime example. You know, even without having developed your back further, you had a great physique. Like, you were well beyond what a lot of people will be able to put together. So it's not as if you had a crap physique and then you figured things out. So you already did everything he was talking about, right? You ate the food, you trained your butt off, and, you know, you took your creatine and you grew a lot of muscle. But then you realized, you're like, hey, my back isn't improving the way everything else is. And that's where these conversations literally come in, where you were able to change that.
Absolutely. I mean, you nailed it 100%. It's just part of the game. You have to find a way to keep moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah. We always get questions like that. So, you know, whatever people, you know, and if he's not at that point, then I, like you said too, I'm with you, man. I encourage him to just keep doing what he's doing. How about this? So we had a few that were kind of follow-up questions. So this is follow-ups from the last episode where you talked about matching your training to your food intake. And a couple people had some stuff they wanted to ask. At what body fat percentage do you recommend to drop the volume, or is it when the strength starts going down?
So personally, I only recommend to drop volume when you start to see a drop off in strength. And generally, the easiest way to spot that is if you do have a logbook, and let's say, for an example, you've got 3 working sets of a cable fly, right? If you notice that in the last 2 sessions, the 3rd working set, 1, the drop off in the load that you are able to use and your repetitions is pretty much starting to plummet, and you're not really getting much out of that set, and you'll feel if that set is productive or not. You will know in yourself whether that set was quality or not. That is the set that I would drop off. And that principle I like to use as a whole across your entire session when it comes to volume reduction. So it doesn't matter what body fat percentage you are. It's more so dictated by your training performance and your logbook ultimately. And if you're not using a logbook, again, I'm not going to kill you, I'm not going to shoot you, don't worry. But if you're not using a logbook, you still need to have an understanding of how these sets feel to be able to adjust your training volume when it's needed. And realistically, some people don't adjust the volume and they still get fantastic results. But in my opinion, from experience with myself and clients, I believe that adjusting volume when necessary will allow you to stay bigger in prep. That's just what I've seen.
You know, there's something too, I think, a psychological component to doing something different that I think is exciting. You know what I mean? I like that, because also too, when you change that rep range, you're no longer comparing yourself against, oh man, 6 months ago when I was all sauced up, I was pushing this. Now I'm only pushing this. You know, I think there's something, even if you were to get slightly weaker, just doing something different, it kind of disassociate. You don't have those same expectations now once you change the exercises, change the rep ranges, stuff like that.
That's a great point, actually, Scott. And one thing I want to mention here is I know how much my performance differs on certain lifts when I'm lighter or when I'm heavier. So I have a reference point of where I need to be when I'm actually lighter across certain lifts. So I somewhat expect that, and I can actually work from a previous logbooks, from previous preps and diet phases to know where I need to be at as well. But again, that's not for everyone. That's just me. One thing people need to remember is weight moves weight. Lighter you get, some movements are just going to feel worse, and inevitably you either need to change them or just drop the load slightly and accept that you're not going to be able to stay strong at certain lifts. But as a whole, you need to stay strong.
Yeah, you used the word accept, and you need to accept it. I think that's important too. I think sometimes people meet themselves with judgment, and they start feeling, you know, they'll have feelings related to their strength. And then that's where I think things can get negative. You know, people start having less fun in a dieting phase, you know?
Yeah, you want to stay as positive as possible. I truly believe that. You want to be happy going through any phase that you go through. You don't want to be miserable in any way, shape or form, because I think prep sometimes for some people, especially if they don't, you know, really like the process that much, it can be a miserable process, right? So you need to try to make it as fun as possible. And sometimes if that means, you know, ditching a logbook in certain cases, then do so. You know, you've got to do what you need to do to protect your happy bubble, in my opinion.
I'd agree with that 100%. All right. Let's see. Got a couple more here. How about this one? Question for Kuba. It's very interesting, the choice of rep ranges and exercise selection off-season and prep. Do you do the same thing when reversing out of a diet, backing out of a comp?
So coming out of a show, I will stay in somewhat safer rep ranges. So initially, it's not going to be super high rep ranges, but I would like to sit between 10 to 15 reps across the board, in my opinion. That's going to be the rep range that's going to allow me to stay pretty safe, and it's going to be a rep range that will allow me to not only use less load, but in a fashion, it forces you to use less load if you focus on your tempo and obviously spend a little bit of time in the stretch and what have you, controlling the end ranges. Think about it, a set of 12 reps on a hack squat, for example, if you've got good tempo, it's probably going to take you around a minute. So yeah, you are going to be forced to use somewhat lower loads than you have been previously. And this is where I prefer to actually introduce some of the heavier loading when I get into a place where I am fully recovered post-show. So post-show recovery, I tend to try and keep it on somewhat of a safer side where I don't venture into lower rep ranges that I know can come with some higher loading and obviously higher risk as well. I think when you're lean, you don't really want to be taking these chances or risks.
Yeah. Hey, just a quick question. You said, hack squat might take a minute if you had a good tempo. How would you define a good tempo?
Full control of the eccentric. So again, that could be a second and a half. It doesn't need to be a 5 second eccentric, right? But for me, you need to have full control of the eccentric. And the most important one for me, especially in a hack squat, is having control in the bottom of the rep. So what I see often happen is a lot of people come down into that eccentric and then boom, they use some elasticity of the joint to change direction. Now, yes, sir, that's exactly that. That is what I want to see people avoid like plague, because one, you are taking quality stimulus off the actual muscle, and two, you're kind of using your joints to change direction and you're using momentum to change direction. Yeah. Now, one thing I used to say back in the day is momentum kills gains. And I think to a degree, that's probably not that true. But what momentum will do is probably put you at a little bit more of a risk of an injury. And in my opinion, if you can spend a little bit more time in that position where the movement is hardest, you are going to get more from it.
Absolutely. I see it in one exercise I've witnessed it in a lot recently is the dumbbell row. That somebody can use a lot more weight on that dumbbell row if they get kind of like a good rhythm and up, down, it's kind of, and I just trained back yesterday and I was feeling that out for myself because I've broken myself of that habit. You know, that for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction, right? So as we're coming down, if you don't give enough time to dissipate that energy from the negative, then it's, of course, it's going to, as Scott Stevenson's talked about a ton on Muscle Minds, you know, there's going to be that elastic response that's going to happen. I like to almost imagine like I almost cushion it down into the hole. Same with the hack squat. I have the most control. Like you said, it's going to be right in that bottom. I almost want it to feel like it's like a space shuttle landing or something. You know what I mean? Onto like a soft spring.
Imagine like you're cocking up a spring, right? Cocking up a spring. So it's coming down quite fast. And as you get deeper, you slow it down even more. Gets harder. Pause and then boom, explode up.
Yeah.
And one thing I see a common mistake with at the moment as well is people are overly cautious and almost slow on the concentric portion of the rep. Now, when you get to a point where you are using a lot of load, that concentric is going to be slow anyway, but you need to focus on being as powerful into that concentric as possible. That is the portion of the rep where you want all out effort and intensity, whether you're pressing or doing any movement. I think if you try and be slow in a concentric, I think you're actually probably creating less quality stimulus, in my opinion.
I'm so happy to hear you say that. Ron, Dusty, and I talked about the exact same thing. And here's what people are seeing. They see the way Nick Walker trains. Nick Walker has a very slow, controlled concentric and eccentric, and they're judging it off of that. It works for Nick. You know, it works for Nick. What's that?
Right, Scott. There's a reason why Nick has a slow concentric, right?
What's that?
He's pressing 140-pound dumbbells, right?
Yeah.
If you're pressing 80-pound dumbbells, 90-pound dumbbells, your dumbbells, you are putting all the effort into that concentric, they are going to move a lot faster than Nick's 140-pound dumbbells.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there's an amount of you can feel the weight get away from you. You know what I mean? You could feel that weight get away from you. If you, another place I've seen it is I've had people do a hard squeeze at the bottom of a seated hamstring curl, and they're bringing it down. They're bringing it down aggressively. They get it down to the bottom and it bounces back up before they catch it. They can't stop it directly at the bottom. There's got to be that little bounce back first. And that's that centrifugal force. You know what I mean? That you bring it down. You can't just, and if you just slow it down a hair, still driving as hard as you can, but you just slow it down a hair, then you're keeping it in the muscle, you know, all the way down, and you can bring that right down to the bottom and stop it without getting the bounce back. And I had a couple clients recently. I said, hey, try that, you know, try to not let that little, it's a minuscule thing, and it's not like you're not going to grow if you don't do this, right? But just that little change of not letting it get that little bounce back at the bottom before they catch it, it made all the difference in the world. And they said, oh my God, my hams are fried. Plus, you know what, too, a lot of this stuff, Kuba, we're able to not go quite as heavy. Like that dumbbell row, you know, you said, you know, the elasticity, the elastic response, could it cause an injury? What about like using heavier weights than you need? You know, there's a certain point that I think the weight starts to get scary. The heavier the weight I'm using, the more risk I'm taking. If instead of getting a rhythmic bounce out of the bottom on my dumbbell row with a 150, hey, maybe I could use a 120 and cushion it into the bottom and give it a slight pause and get just as much, if not more, out of it, you know?
I completely agree. And your point about the hamstring curl, it's something that I am a massive fan of, I'm not going to lie. So I'm super happy you actually mentioned that. Because if you don't have the ability to complete that rep and fully stop in that deep range when your hamstrings are fully contracted, you're simply using too much load. You are. It's just like, it's quite exactly like doing a bicep curl, going here and then bouncing back and then coming back up on you. It's just not, you're not going to get the same benefits, in my opinion, whether you're using more load. So I would argue less load, but having the ability to have that control in that deep range, you are going to get more from that.
Yeah. 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 I like that. I'm glad we're on the same page. You ever mess around with your upper body in the hamstring curl? Cause I've done some stuff, and it was Shelby who had shown me this. Leaning forward at times, holding onto the handles, and then you get even a deeper stretch. I like occasionally I'll rotate. Sometimes I'll do that for maybe 6 weeks, and then I'll go back to sitting back. But if I'm leaning forward, you get a much deeper stretch because your body is basically folded in half.
I'm not completely sold on that, to be honest. I think it might actually increase sensation, but it depends. One thing I'm a fan of, right, is this. And that's regardless of what any biomechanics geeks say. If something feels better for you and you find a way to do an exercise and turn it into even more of a painful exercise and you feel like you can get more out of it, then I think you should go ahead and do it.
Yeah.
Regardless of what people say.
Yeah. I like that.
So it's something that I probably wouldn't do because I know it wouldn't work for me. But if it works for you, absolutely go for it, man.
It helps me,
you know.
Oh, good.
I think if it helps you develop even more of a sensation in your hamstring, which I think a lot of people can lack,
yep,
I think you should go ahead and do that. And then afterwards, if you feel like that sensation now is not needed and you feel like the position you're in is almost limiting your load exposure, go back to your strongest position and then build up your progression from that. So one thing I really want people to understand is there's no rules to training. No matter what the most educated people say in this field, there's no rules to it. If there was rules to it, there would not be outliers like Ronnie Coleman that, you know, trained everything twice per week and looked the way he did, you know, because for me, immortals doing that, they would just look like a bag of bones, yeah. right? Yeah. So it's a point that I really want to get across to people. It's like, I try and put out a lot of helpful stuff, and like you do here with this channel, but I think a lot of people almost get paralyzed to a degree from overload of information. I think a lot of people get paralyzed and scared to do certain things in case certain educators do not agree with it. And look, if someone doesn't agree with it, so what? Anyone can have an opinion, right? It doesn't mean that, you know, it should hold weight. So, you know, just do your thing. And if it feels bad for you, go ahead and do it. As long as you don't hurt yourself, that's my most important thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I'd agree with that 100%. With that hamstring curl, you're absolutely right. I used that to get that, to feel the engagement at the, you know, the, I guess it would be the top of the rep. Because the hamstrings were lacking for me. And by getting a good stretch in the muscle and then activating from the stretch, number one, it does make it harder, you know, trying to activate from a deep stretch. It's like a precarious position, but I do believe it's safe though. And it's something that I, you know, you hear people say, you know, I want a new plan. I want a new plan. And the comeback is often, I've been doing the same, you'll get the huge bodybuilder who says, I've been doing the same plan for 5 years, you know? But for me, that variation will be, I've done more or less the same plan for a long time. But that said, there's variations within it. So I might set that up and say, okay, this is what I'm going to do for right now. I'm going to sit back in the exercise. And then later in the year, you know, I say, oh, I did that for 8 weeks or whatever, and I want to change it up. Now I'm going to lean forward again and I'll try that out and do a run with that for a while, you know?
Yeah, mate, I love that point because I have followed the same training structure and similar movement patterns pretty much for the last 3-4 years. And this is where I have made the most progress.
But there's nuance within it, right? There's small changes that are happening, like you've talked about, all throughout the year.
Yeah, small changes to execution, small changes to certain movements. But as a whole, the program looks very similar. Like, comparing my program now to what it was in 2021, I'm probably doing a little bit less volume, but the program as a whole is pretty much the same.
Yeah, that's wild, man. And I'm with you 100%. I'm glad to hear it. In fact, I'm getting pumped up, man, because I'm training some legs today, so I can't wait to get on that hamstring curl. Let me see what else we got here, because I know we had a couple more. People are really loving the show, by the way. And also, too, before we left, I want to ask you about where you're at with your contest season right now. Let's jump to this one. So this is going to be off topic from everything else. He says, could you guys talk about stretching? Like, when to do it? What do you want to focus on and how much?
So I'm just vlogging Scott from my YouTube, so I'm just going to get a quick clip.
What's up?
So Scott, hello.
What's going on, Cuba?
YouTube. This is like the, it was Inception, that film with Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah. Anyway, and then I'm going to share that, you know, after you post it. So it's just going to be like a mirror looking into a mirror. You know what I mean?
If you don't know, I am on Think Big channel doing a podcast with Scott twice a month now, isn't it? Not twice a month, yeah. I very much love it, so I'm gonna get back to it and I'll fill you in after on what we've covered.
Hell yeah, thanks Cooper.
Right. Back at the question, where I'm at, or are we covering the question of stretching first?
Question on stretching, and then before we left I wanted to know, because everybody's gonna want to know where you're at with your contest prep right now. But yeah, so the question was stretching. What do you guys think about it? Like, when to do it, and what do you focus on, and how much?
I'm not going to lie, Scott. I'm not a fan of stretching at all.
Really?
I am more of a fan. I'm more of a fan of, it's not really stretching because it's actual movement. So I'll give you an example. A lot of people stretch before leg training, and I don't actually do any stretching before leg training. But what I do is some active drills. So generally, I'll do a rear foot elevated split squat. And whilst I'm doing the split squat, I actually pause mid-range. So I'll start at the very top. I'll come down. I'll take a pause. I'll come down. I'll take a pause again. Oof. Then I'll keep full depth in the stretch. I will spend some time in that stretch and then drive up. I will do around 10 reps on each leg. And then I will move on to a walking lunge, 5 to 10 reps on each leg. and I'm ready to train.
Yeah.
So for me, I think stretching is literally what you should be doing in training when you are training with full range of motion.
I like that.
If you have got a well-programmed training plan, that should cover all your mobility needs and stretching, because there's no better stretch than getting a dumbbell and taking it through full range of motion, taking a pause in the stretch, and then driving through. There's no better stretch than hitting full depth on a leg press or a hack squat or a lunge, right? You're not going to get any more stretching than that.
Man.
So in my opinion, what you should focus on is full range of motion and good execution with your training.
I had such a hard time with that full range of motion on chest. I was doing kind of half reps for a long time, I guess, or I'd bring it down to like, you know, elbows at upper arm was parallel to the floor kind of thing. And it wasn't until, and I'd go a little bit deeper than that, but I always had shoulder issues. And I found that if I went real deep, that bicep tendon up in the front delt would just scream at me. It wasn't until we hit the pandemic that I actually said, like, and my chest didn't suffer. Like, my chest was still okay, you know, but it was in the pandemic that I only had initially my little at-home bench and my dumbbells that I bought when I was 15 with my after work, after school job money. And I started doing like 40 rep sets, 50 rep sets, because it's all I had. And guess what? I could take it all the way down. And then I rebuilt it from there as I got heavier dumbbells and I kept that range of motion. For a guy that's doing, let's say he's pressing the 110s and he's not getting that full range now, I don't think either of us are going to tell him, you need to just jump in there with the 110s and drop it down, right? How would he approach it? Because in my opinion, it took humility for me and it took backing way down on the weight to work on that range, you know?
In my opinion, you have to swallow your ego. I had to do that numerous times because I always took pride in being quite strong. Mm. And when the time came to really focusing on true full range of motion across certain movements, I really needed to swallow my pride. So I do think sometimes you just need to swallow your pride and, you know, accept that you are going to lift less load, but with more range. And I think less load, more range of motion, not only it's safer, but I think you just get more from it. I think a lot of people that use a very short range of motion, they're not really challenging the muscle in the stretch. And again, there's new research that suggests, you know, stretch mediated hypertrophy, all this bollocks, right? We knew this for years. Like, we've been doing this for so many years. It's nothing new that we don't know, right? We know that the biggest bang for your gut, that biggest bang for your buck that you get out of any exercise is always in the deep stretch, because it's the hardest to a degree. And to me, it feels the best. Like, when I go into a stretch on my chest across a pec fly or a press, like, that is where I feel like I get the most out of my pecs.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what you're saying.
Yeah. Oh, I agree with you. You know, John Meadows always had a stretch component to his training. So there was the warm-up exercise, making sure that all the, like, the connective tissues, all the muscles, everything's feeling good. Then your heavy meat and potatoes exercise. Then your volumizing exercise, like just trying to get as much blood into that muscle as possible. Followed by a stretch, or there might be a combination, but that stretch might be like a dumbbell pullover, for instance, some type of pullover movement where he's getting a stretch. So there's that. I believe in that stuff. And then I also, which would be stretching within the workout. And then the other thing I've believed in, and I'm not good at it, I'll be completely honest, is the DC stretching. So I don't stretch after or before my workout, but I am a fan and I do believe there is something to like the heavy loaded DC stretches. I'll be honest, I haven't done it a lot myself, though.
I'll be honest, I actually do DC stretches after my push and pull.
Yeah, so okay.
If you go on YouTube, that's actually something I forgot to mention. So generally, after a pull session, I will hang on a bar, a straight bar.
Yes.
I will put the stack on and I will hang for a minute and a half after pull. And then I will actually hang on a dip in the stretch position for a minute and a half after push days. And that just opens everything up. And it, the amount of blood that I get into my muscle with doing so is huge. So whether it has any benefits or not, I don't really care, because I do it because it feels good. And secondly, it also exposes me, especially in a dip, into a very deep stretch. It exposes me to a range of motion that's deeper than any press that I do with my body weight as well. And that means for me that if I can stay in that position, in that stretch, holding my own body weight, the likelihood of me getting hurt under load is going to be slim.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a fan. Scott Stevenson would tell you that it will make a difference. You know, we had talked about it on the show before, the science behind it. It shows that it is going to be beneficial, but you figured that out for yourself. So you didn't need to know that. All right. Got one more question. It's my question for you. And really the audience wants to know too. So how far out are you from your show and how are things going? Where are you at? Tell us all about it.
So I am currently at 11 weeks and 3 days out from a show. I am leaner now than I was at 6 weeks out last time. And my body weight is 248 pounds. Now, comparing my pictures now versus when I was pretty much at 6 weeks out in the same sort of condition, I was probably about 235, 236.
Okay.
So I'm leaner now and over 10 pounds up as well.
What do you attribute that to?
Just taking time away from stage, to be honest, Scott. I think the way I structured my push-up, and I think the first push-up was the most productive one. I should have probably prepped after that. The post-show phase for me and the push-up that I did was tremendous because I really took my time. I didn't go hard on the food and I really protected my appetite, meaning that I spent 32 weeks in a surplus and my appetite didn't die. My appetite was still high.
Okay, yeah.
And the body fat accrual was actually quite small as well. So I do think that the biggest error that people make is rushing their body weight up. And I think they overfeed themselves and just go too hard on cheat meals, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I think that is where people lose the sensitivity. And I think there's a massive correlation between your body fat levels, your insulin sensitivity, and your appetite. I kid you not, Scott. You can ask my wife, you can ask Jordan. I was eating 950 grams of carbs per day. I was still clock watching my meals.
Really? Yeah, you couldn't ask for more, man.
I would eat a meal and 30 minutes later, I would be starving. But let me tell you one thing, Scott. It was probably the hardest thing I had to do because for the first 10 weeks post-show, I was actually hungrier than I was in prep.
Yeah, I believe it.
So if you can, anyone listen to this, if you can handle that and if you can take your time and be patient, you will make the most progress ever have done because your body is just so responsive and the insulin sensitivity is so high. Your training progression will be incredible. And more importantly, my health markers and my health in general has never been as good. And I really attribute that towards the diet with the fruit, the veg, and simply just not eating any garbage, to be honest. And the way I feel, both physically and mentally, and have felt, it's been the best, to be honest. And I definitely attribute that to more so the diet practice 100%. And, you know, keeping myself away from overfeeding, overstuffing myself, and my food choices as well. I haven't really rarely ate off plan, to be honest. And if it was, it would always be something like sushi. And I actually, massive shout out to Edo in Sheffield, Roku. The sushi chef actually makes me a special dish called Kuba dish. And he actually weighs me the fish, gets me all the rice done. So I know exactly what I'm having every single time.
I love
it. It's amazing. But
that's cool, man. That's cool. I call that learning. That's what I call that. You know, I call that learning. You're improving, you're getting better. And that what more can you ask for in bodybuilding? Like, that's the goal right there, is to do better this year than you had in the past years. Otherwise, if you're just doing the same thing, it almost gets to be like, well, what's the point anymore? You know what I mean?
Listen, Scott, for me, it's literally about self-development. It's all about getting better.
Yeah.
I know I'm never going to be Mr. Olympia, and I've accepted that, right? But what I also know is I gain a tremendous amount of satisfaction from going through the process, and I simply love the process of bodybuilding, right?
Yeah.
So for me, it's literally all about self-development. If I can be 5-10% better year on year, I'll take that. And I'm happy with that, regardless of where I placed and what happens.
Yeah, I feel the same way, man. And we can all do that, you know. Our situations are always different. My situation is different today than it was 10 years ago, but it doesn't mean that I can't still work to be the best that I can today and work on self-development. You know, it's at the end of the day, that's really what it's about. And if you can have that in your heart, then really the placings don't even matter. You know, that's just, it's part of the experience doing the show, but the real experience is happening now, you know?
I also think you'll be much happier in doing so because, you know, there's no pressure apart from, the only pressure is you being the best version of you, right?
Yeah.
There's nothing else that matters. For me, it really doesn't matter. I mean, I'm very secure in what I do. I've got a lot of things going on in my life that, you know, are great. But more importantly, I can very much enjoy my bodybuilding with no added pressure or stress because ultimately, I don't compare myself to anyone else. It's just me and it's all about my process and nothing else is really relevant.
Yeah, I love that, man. I love that. Well, thank you, Kuba, for coming back on, sharing your positivity, sharing your insights, but also sharing your positivity, because I think that's what a lot of people connect to, is not only the deep insights that you've shared, but the attitude that you bring, you know, and I think that the world, we need more of that. You know, that's what we all need is to kind of focus on those positive things and how to better ourselves, you know, versus going down those darker roads. Because bodybuilding could be the complete opposite if you let it, you know?
Scott, bodybuilding has given me the life that I live now and the life that I really love. So I owe a lot to bodybuilding. So any way I can make it a little bit more positive, I think people should. Because to me, it gives me so much fulfillment. And I only wish that other people would experience the same thing.
I feel the exact same way, man. I want people to have their own version of my experience, you know?
Absolutely, all right, man. Guys, listen, thank you so much. Thank you, Scott.
Oh yeah, dude, this is absolutely my pleasure, as much as, you know, it's great to do it for the channel, but it gives me an opportunity to be like, hey, let me talk to Kuba from literally around the world and just shoot the crap about training for an hour, man. You don't have to thank me. This is my pleasure.
Just give Dr. Scott a quick shout out as well.
Oh yeah, yeah. Be Your Own Bodybuilding Coach, byobbcoach.com. Also go to Amazon to get the hardcover.
It's great. It's like the third time I'm reading it now. I read it every prep.
Do you really? That's fantastic, man.
Yeah, hey, I always read a lot more in prep, so.
Anything you want to plug or shout out? Anything before we went? Anything going on?
All good.
All right, cool. Well, definitely, guys, follow Kuba. I'm going to have the link for both his YouTube and for Instagram. I'm sure you're probably already following him, though. And thank you guys for watching. Thank you to our Patreon subscribers. We should put this out there, too. We didn't have a training critique today. So, guys, if you have a training critique, let me know. Comment, and I'll reach back out to you. You guys can hit me up on email and send it over. We'll figure it out. And, of course, thank you to TrueNutrition.com. Get all your supplements that you need over there, especially for you guys in the U.S. Use our code THINK. And, of course, SupplementSource.ca for our Canadians. Great deals that change week to week. And Patreon, you guys are freaking the best. I appreciate you. Guys, we still don't have a name. I was about to say for another episode of Kuba Talks Training. I don't know.
Big bodybuilding, that's the name. So we'll just have to have a little bit of a spin-off, you know?
That sounds good to me. All right, guys. We'll see you soon. Thanks, Kuba.
Thank you.
All right, cool. That was great, man. It was really good.